Hi, welcome back to Door County Gardening. Once again, I'm your host, Brett Hansen, and I'm very happy to be here with you today to talk about native plants and native plant landscaping and gardening. But before we begin with these two extremely qualified, wonderful Door County Master Gardeners, I want to remind everyone that one of our goals here at Door County Gardening is to feature Door County experts, the people in our community who have learned how to grow and adapt their plants and gardens in this environment over years of experience. So hopefully each month we will feature an expert from our area. This week it is experts on native plants, and next month we will be featuring experts in beekeeping, the co-presidents of the Door County Beekeepers Club. So thanks again for showing up, and please make sure you pass the word and let other people know. And if you don't feel like liking or subscribing or any of those things, I'll live, but it would certainly help the podcast out a lot. So let's get to it. Let's hear about native plants in Door County from the people who really know. Although it might seem relatively new, the native plant movement has been building for many decades. And I guess we should say it's as old as plants, before we, you know, got in the way. Fortunately, this week we are lucky to have two Door County Master Gardeners who are also native plant experts, Karen Newburn and Chris Dobner. Welcome to the show, everyone. Now, before I start asking a lot of questions, we'd really love to hear more about your background and philosophy on native plants and gardening in general. So, Chris, why don't you get us started?
Okay, my background is really in education. I was a special educator in the county for 37 years or something like that. I got interested in native plants just from loving being outside and going to different parks and things like that and seeing the plants. And so I joined in 1991, I joined Wild Ones. At that time, there was no Wild Ones in Door County, so I joined the Green Bay chapter. And we did a lot of plant rescues, and that was really interesting. And then when they organized Wild Ones in Door County, I did join that and have been a member of that since then. Then I also joined the Door County Master Gardeners in 1997 and have been very active in that organization as president, as charge of our plant sale, the garden door, and many of the committees. And I've gone to a lot of conferences, and always my main interest has been with native plants in the natural world.
Chris, did you say plant rescues?
Yes. They used to do in Green Bay, they used to rescue native plants, mainly when they were building. And so they were going to destroy. You'd go to these places and there'd be these big, beautiful new houses with just lawns and some spindly little trees held up by stakes. And then right to the side, there'd be this gorgeous woods with every kind of, you know, native woodland plant you want to see. And they were going to destroy that. So they would let us come in and dig plants and bring them to our homes and gardens and plant them there. So, yeah, it was really interesting.
The plant rescuers. That sounds like a podcast in itself. You know,
well, yeah,
but whole series.
There's controversies with that too in doing it, but there we did mostly, like I said, where it was going to be destroyed. We once went down to Oshkosh to a by the hospital there. They were going to they had planted a prairie. Neil Dibol and Prairie Nursery had planted it for them, and they were going to expand their parking lot because they were expanding the buildings. So they were just going to cement over it. So they let us go and dig all the plants we wanted. It was quite an experience. It was a rainy day, and I took my sister with me, who is no way, shape, or form a gardener. She was not happy with the mud.
Yeah. But, yeah. Well, hopefully you hooked her. What about you, Karen?
Well, I've been interested in plants ever since I was a little girl. I grew up on a farm, and my mom was really into wildflowers. And then when I went to college, I started out, I was going to be a game warden, but then I realized that probably wasn't a great angle. So I went into, I studied to become a naturalist. And so for about 30 years, I did education programming, first down in Northeast Iowa, and then I moved up to Door County in 2000 to work at the Ridges Sanctuary. And so I was doing education programs, hikes, and teaching people about not just plants, but that's always been kind of my biggest interest. And so in 2014, I left the Ridges, and I was lucky enough to land at Door Landscape and Nursery, which is up in Carlsville. It's a landscape company, but we specialize in using native plants. So I had a chance to, I had to kind of change my thinking a little bit. And instead of just talking about those native plants in their natural habitat, I had to try to translate how do you put that into your home garden or your home landscape. So I've been doing that for about 10 years. I'm the nursery manager there, and we just do everything that we can to promote the use of natives in home landscapes, some commercial properties as well. And I've done a little bit of plant rescuing too, not a lot, but I have a few wildflowers in my front yard that came from a property where some trails were going to be developed, and they were, you know, going to dig up all of these things anyway. So they came, and now they're living happily in my front yard.
Yeah. I've always wanted to go do plant rescues, but my wife said no, because it looked to her like stealing. But I know you two had permission, but if I snuck in the middle of the night, I don't think the neighbors would consider that plant rescue. So,
right.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So, let's talk a little bit about the benefits of native plant gardening. And remember, we want this to be understandable for the beginner, like me. I'm a relative beginner when it comes to native plants, but don't hesitate to add some, advanced information as well. But let's start off with a little bit of benefits of plant gardening, native plant gardening for a beginner.
Okay. Well, I think that kind of to step even back a bit from that, I think that a lot of our, what we consider a typical home landscape is pretty much an ecological desert. There's, if you have a big expanse of lawn and, like Chris was saying, a few little trees here and there, maybe some potted annuals up by the front doorstep, that's not providing much habitat for insects, butterflies, birds, squirrels, any kind of wildlife. And so I think that one of the biggest benefits of using native plants in the landscape is to provide some of those habitat benefits. Food and shelter for, you know, we all like to see butterflies and we like to have birds in our yard, but a lot of people don't realize that what you plant or don't plant can really affect that. So if we want to see more wildlife and be able to enjoy butterflies and so on, we need to use the plants that they are familiar with, that they can use.
Now, I would say too that these plants have developed in this area for many, many years. And so they are used to the climates. You know, here we go from freezing in the winter to hot in the summer, and a lot of snow cover at times and not so much at other times. These plants have developed with that kind of background. And they've also developed with the insects and the animals in this area. And that makes them a better choice, because you don't need to do as much fertilizing, you don't need, and you don't need pesticides, because you want those insects to be in your garden, because that's what you're doing, is developing habitat. And like, I've had a prairie now for almost 30 years, and I've never fertilized it. The only thing we used to do is burn. We haven't done that recently, which degrades the prairie somewhat, but you know, I haven't put pesticides on it. I've done some herbicides because of the way our environment is now, we get in invasive plants. And so you do have to do some dealing with that. But your native plants don't need as long as you put them, you know, it's still the same garden thing as the right plant in the right area. I'm in a very wet area. I live basically in the Black Ash Swamp. And so you can't put plants that like dry, sandy soil. They're not going to grow, you know, no matter what. You have to fit your plants, whether native plants or not. You have to fit them to your soil and light conditions and all those regular garden aspects.
So,
and if,
say like with the invasive species, the garlic mustard that's everywhere here in Door County, I mean, is it worth the removal of the garlic mustard to use some kind of herbicide or something to kill it? I have a lot of it around some other bushes. I have this wonderful mock orange bush and next to a dogwood and another bush, and the birds just love it. So I dig up the garlic mustard at the bottom. I'm very hesitant to spray anything. That's where the birds eat. I mean, should I just keep digging it up?
It kind of depends on your plant. Garlic mustard, you can pull and dig. But if you get into canary reed grass and Phragmites, that you can't dig that up and pull it. You'd probably have to use some kind of heavy duty equipment to do it. But so you might have to, with like Phragmites, they tie it up, cut it off, and then they treat it with so that they're not spraying all over the place, because you don't want to do that. You want to protect the insects and things that are around. But there are some plants, you try and dig them and the roots just keep coming back anyway. So
yeah,
it depends.
I think you can think of herbicides can be thought of as a tool. You know, it, like Chris was saying, some plants, invasives, you can get rid of by pulling. You may have to do it for 5 or 6 or 7 years, but you can get ahead of them and rid of them eventually. But there's some instances, and conservation agencies use herbicide carefully and judiciously in certain instances, because that's the only way to get rid of some of our invasives. And some of it has to do too with, you know, how much labor and how much time do people want to invest? If you want faster results, for instance, if you decide you're going to put in a prairie, yes, you could kill all the existing vegetation with herbicides, and then you're going to be able to get in there and start planting faster. Or you can take less aggressive approaches that might take a little more time. So the answer is, as it often is, it depends.
Yeah. That's what I'm learning as a gardener. I'd say I've been a gardener since we moved to this property, 5 years at the most. I garden a little bit at our old house, but that at first I wanted simple answers. I just wanted things. I do it and I don't have to mess with it again. And I finally settled into the slightly more patient relationship with nature. And I just, everything's always changing. I mean, I knew that everywhere else. I don't know why I thought it wasn't going to happen in the garden, but just got to relax and do the best you can and roll with it. So, and then for watering, that's another thing. I had to water a lot last year because of how dry it was. I have a little over an acre with lots of gardens. I have been told that native plant gardening requires less watering. Does that turn out to be true?
I think it does. I mean, I have the prairie out there and it's 4 acres or something like that. There's no way I can water that. And so I haven't watered it at all, and it does fine without any water. Yeah. And even in my garden where there's native plants, I don't water much, where I might have to go and water some of the other plants that I have that are non-native plants.
I think a lot of it, once they're established, most natives are very drought tolerant. They, some of those prairie plants have roots that go 6, 7, 10 feet into the ground. So they're going to be able to tap into deeper water sources, where our shallow rooted lawns, for example, which might have 2 or 3 inches of roots, the surface of the soil dries out and they're doomed, where a prairie drop seed plant is going to be sucking water from much deeper and is going to be able to survive. But a lot of, like most garden plants, getting them established, you might have to do some supplemental watering just to get them going. Once they're set, they're not completely maintenance free, but pretty close.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting a little bit older. I mean, I turned 55 a few days ago, and I love gardening, but it's starting to have more of an effect, especially on my back. So I have a feeling that over the next 10 years, I'm going to slowly be transforming some of my gardens into something more like native plant gardening. And I have a couple that I want to talk about later. But what about the contemporary issues with native plant gardening? I mean, we know these plants have been around for centuries, for ages, for eons, but now we have these contemporary issues like climate change and invasive species. What role does native plant gardening have on some of these contemporary issues? Especially climate change.
We talked before about how these native plants have evolved in our climate, in our soil conditions, they're probably going to be able to weather climate change better. Certainly, there's going to be some changes, as the temperatures get warmer. But, I think that natives overall are going to be able to cope with that better. I'm not
And
sure what other issues.
there's going to be some plants that are going to you're going to lose, and other plants will take over and survive. And so it kind of depends on just how severe the climate change is. Also, because your native plants are open pollinated, meaning they seed and continue to grow, they can make changes. A lot of your non-native garden plants are clones. And if it's a clone, it means it does not seed itself. It's growing from tissue culture and root thing culture, that kind of thing. So it can't change with the climate because it is what it is. And so your open seeded, open pollinated plants have a better chance to survive.
So since we're talking about that anyways, like with invasive species, last year, I'm not sure if I have the name of the pest correct, but I call them Japanese beetles, the little things that they've been getting worse each year. Last year, they were just, I mean, I was constantly fighting them on my roses. I have about, I don't know, 25, 30 rose plants in an area. And there was, one day was just, they just overwhelmed me. I was out there, with the bags and the squeezing and everything. And so are there any native plants that you know of that repel or that those kind that Japanese beetles don't like, or that would help my roses, or is it just I'm gonna have to go with some kind of spray?
Well, with Japanese beetles, you can spray them, but the sprays aren't terribly effective. I was at a program at the Green Bay Botanical Garden a few years ago, and we asked them, how do you deal with them? And they have staff that go out with buckets of soapy water, and they knock all of the Japanese beetles they can find into this soapy water. They die. It's certainly not going to get rid of all of them, but Japanese beetles do have certain favorites, and also the number of Japanese beetles really depends on weather conditions year to year. Last year actually was not a bad year, I think, in my experience, but there have been years when they've been a lot worse, and it depends on rainfall and temperatures and all of that kind of thing, and I can't remember the details. But there is going to be some years that are bad and some that aren't. Because they're Japanese beetles, they came from Asia. It may be that certain of our natives are not as tasty to them. So there's probably a benefit to that, sure.
Well, I just need to tell you, Karen, the reason why you didn't have a very hard time because all your Japanese beetles were at my house
They were all at
on
your
my
house?
roses because
Okay,
they were.
I don't have hardly any, but then I don't have roses, and that's one of their favorites.
I love my roses. This summer I'm gonna be out there ready from the beginning. I think I might sleep in the rose garden if I have to with night vision goggles or something, but we'll see. So the invasive species issue is a tough one. I have, I listen to everything that people listen to, and I really, really love the pollinators. I keep bees. Last year we had more and more. Well, the year before we had more butterflies, but last year was pretty good, and we had more hummingbird moths. So I'm trying really hard not to damage or poison anything in that regard, but I have to do something about these Japanese beetles this year because it was very frustrating. So what about like the pollinators? I know you, and we all know that pollinators like native plants, but so I'll give you just a quick example. I planted sunflower, so I have a cut garden this on the other side of my driveway. It's eight rows of about 40, 40 spots, so about 325 places for plants, and it's all annuals, and then I just redo it. It's not very native at all. But 2 years ago, there were days when there were like 40 monarchs. They loved it. Is it, so my question I want to ask is, are those butterflies still doing well? Should I have more natives instead of that? Or is it okay for me to have that and natives to improve things for pollinators? Because I really, really want those butterflies to come back every year.
Okay. Yeah, you would. The thing that your plants are, they're nectaring on those plants, but they can't raise their young on those plants. Monarch butterflies can only raise their young on milkweed, on Asclepias, species.
Yeah, I have about 30 milkweed plants in the whole yard everywhere in other spots.
See, and that will help. Then you can have both of them. That's fine to have the nectaring plants as long as you also have some of the host plants. And I think Doug Ptolemy says like about 90% of pollinators have at least some specific plants that they need. It might not be just one species like the monarch, but it might be just several species. But most of them are not generalists where they can use anything.
Right. And then maybe later at the end, you both of you can give us some suggestions. I want to provide the best plants I can for the pollinators, but I also want my cut flowers. And so I'm going to do both. But did you want to add anything to that, Karen?
Oh, I just wanted to say that, you know, non-native plants are not necessarily bad. Many of them are excellent nectar flowers. But like Chris was saying, you have to have the natives if you want the larval stage, the caterpillars, to have something to eat and grow on. Native trees support hundreds of species of larvae, caterpillars of moths and butterflies that then the birds eat. And you don't get that, the non-native plants aren't a food source to that stage of the insect. They may be for the adults, they may provide lots of pollen and nectar, but if the caterpillars can't find food, you're not going to have the adult butterflies.
Right.
And if you don't have caterpillars, your birds aren't going to be there. Because most of your birds, even if they're seed-eating birds and that, they feed their young caterpillars because they're young. In order to grow as fast as they need to grow, they need the protein that comes from caterpillars. So the majority of birds feed their young caterpillars and other insects. And so if you don't have those caterpillars, your bird population is going to fall.
Okay, so for the listeners who are like me, who forget things in 20, 30 seconds. At the end of the program, I'm going to ask both of you again for some specific recommendations on how to help promote the caterpillars. About 3 years ago, we had numerous, I'm pretty sure they were monarch caterpillars under the milkweed pods. I looked them up and it said they were, but last year I couldn't really find any. And we had a lot of milkweed pods and a good number of butterflies. So I'll ask you about that again. In regards to recommendations on how to promote more caterpillars with native plants. I wanted to ask both of you just your opinion on something. When I was getting ready for this, I was doing a little research, and next week I'm going to be just doing an introduction and review on one of my favorite garden designers, Pete Udolf. And I didn't know before I started researching garden designers that he designed the Millennial Park and the Highline, both of which I have walked and enjoyed very much. But while I was researching, I read an article in the Garden Ecology Lab in which a gardener, one of their head gardeners, Signe Garnier, wondered how pollinator-friendly Udolf's naturalist gardens really are. And he said, on the positive side, there are lots of flowers. They flower from early season to late when things are blooming. And the plants are left standing well into winter, providing some seed and shelter. And then they don't use much pesticides, and they try to include native plants as much as possible. But he said on the negative side, their maintenance involves cutting everything to the ground in late winter, which destroys the winter homes of cavity nesting bees and other things that use the stems. And then he also talked about the lack of layering. And I think I know what that meant, but he talked about Udolf's garden is composed mostly of herbaceous perennials and then other plants, but not very many trees or large shrubs. I'm assuming that trees and large shrubs are really important to the native gardening. Does that sound about right?
Definitely. Like we were saying, if you take oaks, for example, they're probably the best trees for supporting insects that then support the birds. So, you know, if you're going to plant a tree, plant an oak tree. But there's a lot of other ones, willows and cherries, basswood, maples, all of those native trees support a huge diversity. I think diversity is the big key there. In any planting, the more diversity of plants you have, the more insects and birds and wildlife are going to be able to use that.
And if you look at some of the Doug Ptolemy is one who does a lot and talks about how many different insects and things that each type of plant supports. And so they have what they call keystone, I think they call them, plants, which support a lot of your pollinators and your insects and things. So it's good to put some of those plants into your landscape.
Is
you
Doug
don't have
telling
to go all native.
Yeah.
You know?
That's good because I don't have enough money and I couldn't possibly let go of my plants. Now I've worked too hard for the last 5 years, but is Doug Ptolemy, is he somebody mentioned him. I was talking with, I think it was the woman who runs the Door Garden Club up north. I think she was saying that Doug Ptolemy was working on a beautiful garden up north someplace. Is he a garden designer? Did I get that right?
No,
he's an entomologist.
Entomologist.
He's at University of Delaware.
Oh, God, I'm way off.
Yeah, somewhere east, but yeah.
Somewhere out on the East Coast. But no, he's an entomologist, and so he's looking at insects.
Okay,
and so then written the relationships to what birds eat those insects and what plants those insects need to survive. And so he's the author of several books. One of them is called Bringing Nature Home, which I highly recommend you check out. He's kind of become the guru of returning home landscapes to more natural conditions.
Yeah, he talks about in his book, I think it's Bringing Nature Home? No, I can't remember. But he talks about homegrown national park and how when we use native plants in our landscapes, we could make a huge national park if enough people did it. And he's also written a book on oaks and how important they are because they are probably the most diverse plant as far as hosting insects and caterpillars and things. So he has written some very good books, and he also has just a article, and it's called Gardening for Life, and you can find it online, and it's just a very brief but important information about the importance of insects, and that man is, if we keep on the path we're heading without developing more native plants and things that would provide for our insects, we're ruining our food chain, and it's going to affect us. And also bees, you know, we don't have all the food if we don't have bees.
Yeah. Yeah. And I keep bees. I have two hives. I'll be splitting and getting more this year, but I have been reading more and more that we have to be careful that we don't rely too much on the honeybees, because there are a lot of honeybees in the United States, but what we really need is the habitat for the native bees, the ground bees and the sweat bees and those bees. So we'll talk about bees on another episode. I really look forward to that.
Yeah, because native bees are more efficient pollinators than honeybees.
Yeah, I read that. Yeah, that's... Yeah. It's important to remember. So, I mean, just because, I mean, like, I love keeping bees. I love my honeybees, but at the same time, I got to make sure I'm creating habitat for the others. Now, we have been talking about all the joys and the wonderful things. What about the challenges? What are some of the challenges of native plant gardening?
Well, I don't know if it's a challenge, but I think some people, as soon as they hear about native landscaping, they think, I have to go 100% native, and that's the only thing that'll work. And as we've mentioned, combinations of native and non-native can work beautifully too. So, if you think it's a challenge to convert your whole yard into prairie, you know, that's one issue, but it's not a challenge it's not very difficult to get a few native plants and stick them in with your rose bushes or your, you know, boxwood hedge or whatever it might be. I think the biggest challenge is just educating people about what natives are all about and showing them how wonderful they are in the home landscape and how easy they are to take care of.
And I think that people have to kind of get a different attitude to some extent about it. It's a more wild looking if you go more native rather than just putting a few native plants in your garden with your other regular flowers, you know, your non-native flowers. It makes a more wild looking, not as cultivated, not as manicured is what I should say. Maybe manicured is a good word. I remember my sister brought a woman she knew up to see my garden, not just my prairie, but the garden too. And And she said, oh, very interesting. Well, this woman had been on the Green Bay Garden Walk several times, and I had seen her garden, and it was, you know, here's a hosta, and here's a hosta, and here's a hosta, and everything's all cleaned up, and that's not a native garden. And so if you're into that, where everything has to be manicured and no holes in your leaves and nothing like that, you're going to have a difficult time with native gardening, because you want holes in your leaves. If you're encouraging pollinators, you're encouraging, you need to have host plants. And if you have host plants, you're going to have caterpillars and things chewing on your leaves. So you have to learn to accept some of that. And so it's a kind of an attitude kind of a thing that people have to learn to do differently.
And yeah. I think we have to get over our love affair with lawns. You know, a lawn provides nothing for pollinators. Even if you let the dandelions grow, you know, this whole idea of no more May, I think that the thought behind it is, the emotion behind it is great, but just letting your lawn grow for a month and then mowing it for the rest of the year and spraying pesticides on it and watering it and the huge amount of
fertilizing it.
We spend, you know, we put much, much more water and much, much more fertilizer and other chemicals on our lawns in the United States than we do on our agricultural crop fields. And people don't realize that. So I think we have to kind of get over this idea that to have a beautiful lawn or a beautiful yard, you have to have a big expanse of perfectly weed-free lawn. I'll get off my soapbox now.
That's okay. I like the soapbox too.
You know, some reasons maybe to have lawn. If you have kids, they need something to play on. We have lawn around our house because we burned our prairie. And that stays green at the time. That's green at the time you're burning your prairie. So it was kind of a safety thing. So we didn't get fire too close to our log home. But other than that.
I live across the street from Little Lake in Sturgeon Bay at Sunset Park. And I know there, I called the city and asked them why. And my representative, a very nice woman, she explained to me why they do it. But they mow that once every week and a half or so. And I just watch a couple people drive back and forth and back and forth and back and forth for, I don't know, an hour and a half or so, mowing the it's like that flat area where they use it as a basin to catch the sediment before it goes down. And I want so bad to just go out there and say, you know, if we're not going to do anything else, just let the grass grow, just something, stop mowing it down for animals. And I think it is going to be, you know, definitely maybe when I retire, I might try to make that my cause. I'm not very political, but I would just love to see native plants in that open space. And then, I mean, there's the rest of the park where people, there's tons of grass and ton, there's the, you know, the disc golf course and all those things. I would just love this one part to be natural, but I'm on my soapbox too. So what about the regulatory hurdles? I was at the, you guys were probably there, or some of you were, I was at the door at the crossroads when the gentleman from Green Bay came up to talk about native plants about a month ago or so. Mm-hmm. And people brought up the Sturgeon Bay regulations and how they were changing them. And I think they said it was, you could have like 50 or 45% of your property or your yard in Sturgeon Bay native. And then you had to get an approval to go beyond that. Either of you know anything about that?
That whole ordinance was revised about a year and a half or so ago. I don't remember the exact percentages, but for the backyard, it's a higher percentage that you can plant native. In the front yard, it's less. I think there's something in there about having like a buffer zone, a mowed area around the natural landscaping. It was, the city council was trying to just kind of define a little bit better what a natural lawn, this was what they called it, is. I can tell you right now that my yard doesn't fit those criteria. But they also, and I think a lot of it has to do with newer construction or newer installations. If someone is putting in a prairie in their backyard, you know, they have to just get approval on that for the city. I don't think the city is going to deny anybody. But it came about because someone had a complaint about their neighbor's property that they thought looked wild and unkempt and weedy. And it was actually a prairie that was in its early stages when they do tend to look kind of unkempt and weedy. You know, if the neighbors had been educated a little bit more about it before the planting went in, maybe they wouldn't have been upset about it. But yeah, if it looks too wild, people may complain about it. But I don't know if any other towns have similar ordinances. I know that the county has like a weed. There's weed regulations to control Canada thistle and whatever else is on that noxious weed list. But I don't know that any other towns or cities have a natural landscaping ordinance. Green Bay does, Madison does, a lot of other cities do. But I'm not sure about the rest of Door County.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring it up in case anybody's thinking about it after listening to this, that I think it was about 50% of the space.
I think it is, yeah.
50% in front and 75 in back, but I could be wrong.
I know it's 4 in the back. So yeah, 50 and 75 might well be that. You can look it up on the city's website easily enough.
And there are like Wild Ones has publications that do talk about making your native planting more acceptable to other people. And that there is, and they have designs now that you can find on their website for all different kind of areas and different places that where they're designing using native plants. And if people are interested in that kind of thing, they can look them up and find them or come, you know, like Earth Day, maybe we'll have some of those available.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And of course, everything is so easy to find on the internet, but I will put a link into Wild Ones and some of the other organizations that we've mentioned. So we just have a couple more components, and I think we'll cover your practical tips and resources before we get to the example garden, just in case people don't want to hear about my gardens. Hopefully they'll stick around for that too. But what practical tips would you offer to people? Not necessarily people who want a full prairie because they're going to go investigate and research and all that, but just for people who want to increase the number of natural native plants that they put in there, where should they put them? Do they have to worry about things like watering? I mean, of course we have to watch out for sun, but I mean, how careful do they have to be about watering and soil and things like that? And then your favorite plants.
Watering shouldn't be a problem with most of your native plants once you get them established. Soil, it depends again about the plant. It's like any plant. You can't take a plant that comes from the woodland and put it out in the sun. You can't take a plant that was developed in a sandy prairie soil and put it in, like I have heavy clay. It's not going to survive. And if you plants from wet areas, if you put them in a real dry area, they're going to have a problem, even if you water them, because there's just differences in the soil and in the plants around them, and it makes a big difference.
I think if people start by learning about what's native to Door County or what's native to their area, go on land trust hikes, go and hike around at crossroads, go to Chris's prairie and see what she's got planted there. I might mention too, prairies technically are not native to Door County, but many prairie plants grow beautifully up here. So when you're talking about, you know, what's a native plant, maybe it's not native to Door County, but if it does well here, and I figure if it provides some kind of benefit to pollinators or birds or whatever, it's okay. But just take some time to learn. I got an email from someone this past week saying they had seen this particular wildflower on a hike and wanted to know if I knew where they could buy them. And so, you know, if you see something you like on a natural area in Door County, do a little bit of digging, a little bit of investigating and see if there's a source for it. And there are quite a few reputable sources for native plants out there. So if you've got your eye on something, take a look around and see if someone and see if you have the right conditions for it, as Chris was saying, as far as water and soil and sun or shade.
Yeah, I just want to make sure it's perfectly clear. Karen did not mean for you to go literally digging, going out and digging up those plants.
I realized
some research.
That. Yep. Yeah. As soon as it came out of my mouth, I thought that was a port.
It was no, it wasn't a port. It was a perfect opportunity for a little bit of humor. So yeah. And I'll add to that, if you're interested in that, I have this, some of you maybe already have it, but I have this wonderful free app called PlantNet, and it's the first free plant identification app that I think works really, really well. I love it. It's great. You can get it for free and download it. And then when you're on those walks, not only will it organize the photos that you take, but it'll tell you with a certain percentage of likelihood what type of plant it is. And you can identify by the leaves or the flowers and other things. It's great. I love it. I spend way too much time looking at it. So now, of course, the part of the show that everybody's been waiting for, the example garden. And I will volunteer to tell you about a couple spaces that I want to go a little more native. The first one, which I want to do more, and I've already bought some plants and I hope I didn't make big mistakes. I have a garden about, it's about 65 feet long and it's about about 10 feet to the center of the spruce trees with another 4 feet on the other side of the spruce. There are these three big spruce trees that were here when we bought the property. And I put down cardboard and killed off the grass. And now I've got some plants and I would love your recommendations on how I can try to stay as native as possible. It is shaded mostly because the spruce, especially it gets sun for about 4 hours in the late afternoon and then through into the evening for the sunset. And I've got those three spruce trees and the plants that I was hoping to plant there. And I'm not sure if this is a good idea. I have other places where I could put them. I got some Christmas ferns, some royal ferns. And I'm not sure if I'm saying this right. Some hochera and some astibi. And I already planted some beech grass in there. Does that seem like a decent combination or should I get some of that stuff out of there and do something else?
The royal fern usually likes wet.
Right.
Like some more moist soils. So I don't know how well that would do in there. The Christmas fern should be fine. That likes fairly dry and chances are your soil might be a little bit acidic with all those spruce needles on it. If the trees have been there for a while. A stilby probably will do fine in there. Might need a little bit of supplemental watering to get them established.
Okay.
Yeah. You could, if you wanted some flowering plants, you could try like a wild geranium. I'm not sure how good they do with the evergreens, since I don't have many evergreens. And bloodroot will grow where it's drier. Again, I'm not sure with the evergreens how it will do.
What about lilies of the valley? Will that be okay there?
No.
No. Okay.
Lilies of the valley can be very invasive. They'll just keep spreading and spreading and spreading. And I mean, they'll crack cement I wouldn't plant those. I wouldn't get those started.
Okay.
They'll probably crowd out most everything else that you plant.
So I already purchased just a few. I just have a few lilies of the valley, the Rosa variety. I have some areas where there's like on the edge where there are some other wildflower. You know, there are like of course lots of dandelions, and then they're I think they're not bluebells, but they look like bluebells. Could I put lilies in the valley just in there on the side of the grass on the edge where the woods are, and just let it spread along there? Is that a good idea?
No.
No,
I would
Should
say
I just
no,
throw it away.
It will keep spreading. I mean, and you'll get it coming up over and through everything. And if it goes into the woods, and it will go into the woods, it's going to take over many of the plants there in the woods too.
So is lily of the valley just basically
something invasive? I would never plant. As much as I
you
love
could
the plant,
you could put your lily of the valley in a container.
Yeah.
And grow it as a container plant.
Will it die in the winter?
It's probably tough enough. You might want to put the pot or put the container in your unheated garage or something in the winter. But that's the best way if you can somehow contain it. If you have a little area that's completely surrounded by sidewalk, you could keep it in that area. But it is, it spreads like wildfire, and it's very aggressive. And I like the flowers a lot, but
Oh, I do too.
I pull a lot of it in my yard.
Yeah, I have some already in an area by the house that it was planted when we moved here, and I'm trying to contain it. And every year I have like a wall. I just dig it up and stop, and then it doesn't get any further. But so I'll keep that out of there. So some wild geranium and some bloodroot. Now, the second area that I'd love to ask you about is it's about 8 to 10 feet wide and about 80, 90 feet long. And I had strawberry plants there, and I've since moved them, and I'm going to do something else because the deer just chomped them and it wasn't sunny enough and all that. So it's sunny, but not super sunny. And I'm getting five serviceberry trees from the Arbor Foundation, and I really want to plant them in that space, kind of spread out, and then native plants all around it. Does that sound like a good idea?
When you say it's kind of sunny, how much sun do you get?
Well, there's sun on it most of the day. It's just a little bit dappled because a few trees. A lot of them were ash, and then now they're, the center, the trunk is there, but all the leaves are gone. It was sunny enough that I would get strawberries. I just had to fight with the bunnies and the deer so much. So I'd say 3/4 sun.
Okay. Well, I love serviceberry. I think it's one of the best native trees you can plant. It has flowers in the spring. It has fruit. If you can beat the birds to the fruit, it's delicious, but the birds usually get there first. And then it has incredible fall color. So, yes, I love serviceberry. I think that's a great choice. If it's just lightly dappled shade, if you're getting shade most of the day, you could probably put some more sun-loving perennials in there, things like black-eyed Susans, coneflowers. I like to have people plant asters because they bloom late in the season when there's not a lot of other stuff flowering. And especially for the monarchs, when they're migrating, they need that nectar source late in the season. And asters come in a lot of different shapes and sizes and colors. So you can get tall ones, shorter ones, white ones, purple ones, and some do well in shade.
You could do goldenrod, but be careful of what goldenrod you do, because some of them are very aggressive.
Do you have a suggestion for one that's not too aggressive that would work in Door County?
Well, there's zigzag goldenrod that actually grows in quite a bit of shade and is not aggressive. What else? Showy
The
goldenrod
stiff,
is relatively.
yes, showy goldenrod is good. There's stiff goldenrod, though that does tend to seed quite a bit, but
That can
it's not,
spread, yeah.
yeah, they tend to spread quite a bit. That's one thing that I sometimes use some cultivars for, just because they aren't as aggressive, but they don't
And then,
feel quite the same ecological niche as some of the other goldenrods, so.
sure. And I was thinking of also, of just throwing bee balm seed in there. I love bee balm. I just love it.
Yes.
And the hummingbird moths are one of my favorite
Oh, they
insects.
love
So,
that. Yes.
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That is
Definitely
wonderful
work.
advice. Thank you very much. Before we wrap up, is there anybody that you wanted to mention, a mentor to you, or any kind of organization that you want to make sure people hear about in case I forget? Anything you want to mention before we wrap up?
Well, I definitely think we should mention Wild Ones. Wild, if people haven't heard of Wild Ones before, they're probably thinking, what are these? Just a bunch of tree huggers running around crazy in the woods. Wild Ones is a national organization that is dedicated to promoting the use of native plants in home landscapes. And the national headquarters is down in Neenah. There's probably close to 60 chapters nationwide now. We have one for the Door Peninsula, a chapter here. And they are a great source for information. As we were mentioning earlier, on their website, they have garden designs that you can download for free. You're getting a professional design using native plants for nothing. And they have a lot of other information about monarchs and, supporting pollinators and other insects. It's a great, great organization. So, and their website is really easy. It's wildones.org.
And we do put on the Door Peninsula Wild Ones, along with Master Gardeners and Crossroads, do sponsor programs that are free to the public and that talk about, you know, native plants or other information about pollinators and things. I also think that Heather Holmes, her website, which is pollinatorsnativeplants.com, is an interesting one, especially if you have kids, and you can download information from there. And it's a pollinator thing. And her books are also very good. So she would be someone, I think, that if people are interested in it, and like I said, if they have kids, she has a lot of interesting little poster type things you can download and things.
Yeah. Well, those sound great. Also, keep an eye out. It might take a little while, but keep an eye out for Chris's new book, The Native Plant Rescuers. It's a mystery set in Northeast Wisconsin about saving some of the most important plants from nefarious characters. So when she gets it done, we'll keep you informed. We'll let you know. And don't forget come back. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay. I did want to say too, that if people are interested in native plants, we are selling quite a few of them at the Door County Master Gardener plant sale. We have a lot of natives this year, and they're in smaller pots, which make them easier to plant, and they catch up pretty soon. And that, so that would be a good source for one, you know, so 1 day, 2 day kind of thing. The first day is a ticketed sale, and then Saturday is a open to the public sale. But that would be a good source for some native plants, but it's only, you know, those 2 days on the 23rd and the 24th of May.
Is that Memorial Day weekend?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Yeah, great. Yeah, and I was just going to mention that, and I also wanted to tell you that I will be going back out to do part two of the Door County Master Gardener's preparation in the greenhouse. And then I will be at the sale with my handy camera, asking lots of questions. And then afterwards, you know, I'll put together the whole video and share it on the Door County Gardening YouTube channel. So you can see that there. It's a great event. And I'm really looking forward to seeing all the wonderful work that these extraordinary gardeners, master gardeners have done. So Chris and Karen, thank you so much for joining me on the show. I can't tell you how grateful we are that you share your knowledge, that you've done all this work, that you've learned it, and that you're actually helping to transform Northeast Wisconsin, especially Door County, into a better place for pollinators, for bees, for birds, for animals, and for us as humans. I greatly, greatly appreciate your wisdom in helping me with my endeavor into native plants. You're both lovely, wonderful people, and I hope I get to talk to you again soon.
Hope so.
Thank
too.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
My pleasure. What wonderful people. Great gardeners, nice neighbors, and willing to share all the things they've learned through all their experiences and years working with plants. Thank you very much to both of you again. And next week, just so you know, I'll have a short feature on one of my favorite birds, the cardinal. At least once a month, I want to just thank these extraordinary animals that are part of our life. And next week's gratitude is for the cardinal. It's a little bit more creative and a little bit more vulnerable and honest. I hope you like it. And make sure to tell your friends and get out in the garden and enjoy this beautiful place that we live in, Door County. Thanks a lot. Until next time.